On behalf of CKUT 90.3, I would like to say thank you for sitting with us today and to talk to us. Is it possible if you can introduce to the audience who you are and what is your affiliation in terms of media?
Thank you for inviting me. I'm a journalist, even though I'm retired. I've been retired for 4 years now, but I consider being, once you're a journalist, you're always a journalist. So I continue doing my work. But as a journalist, I work for La Presse newspaper in Montreal for 40 years on international affairs. So I have had, in fact, opportunity to work with your colleagues at CKUT and CBC and other radios and community radio, Radio Centreville and CIBL and all that. So I try to bring whatever I can to share with my fellow Montrealers.
Well, the public would like to know what's going on.
Well, what has happened in India is really, for the first time, officially, a right-wing extremist party has won the elections and won it clearly with a plurality of votes, only 31%, but with a majority of seats on its own, more than 50%. That is the first in the history of modern India, which has been independent in 1947. And when you talk of right wing, it's like talking about, I don't know, the Christian right coming to power in the United States, as it was under George Bush, as it is now even in Canada under Stephen Harper, or the Front National or the UKIP coming to power in France and in England. That's the impact that it has. And that is basically the significance of this election.
What about the indigenous people?
Absolutely. You see, the problem with India is such a complex society, because you not only have different religions, and the majority being the Hindu religion, there are about 80% of the population of Hindus. Then you have minorities, big minorities, Muslims, who are about 12%, Buddhists, Christians, Jains, and you also have the Aboriginal people, the First Nations of India, who are non-Hindus. They have their own beliefs, a bit like our First Nations in Canada have their own religious and spiritual values. They are in the same position. Having said that, the problem in India is that the Hindu community, society, even though it's a majority, is itself divided and subdivided vertically and horizontally by the caste system.
Well, that sounds like the country is having a war within itself. I mean, is it appropriate election to take place at a time like this? What's going on within subcontext?
Well, the ruling class is very deeply entrenched, and it's been there. It inherited state power from the British. The British ruled India for more than 200 years, and then they had to leave and allow India to become independent. But they transferred that power into the hands of a stratum, of a layer of Indian society, which we can call the ruling class, where you have upper caste Hindus, big business families, Western educated lawyers and intellectuals and writers and thinkers. Those are the people who actually run the country, and they are still running that country today, especially at the federal level, because India is a federation of more than 1 billion people, made up of about 30 states and territories. And each of these states is more or less based on a linguistic group. You have a language that is dominant in one state and a language in another. But all of these states and territories have a common ruling class who may differ on regional issues because they compete, they are rivals for power, for wealth. But on other issues, they will see eye to eye, which is why you have these wars, as you mentioned very rightly, going on in India. And I mentioned three: the war in Kashmir, which is in sort of occupied state, very much like Palestine is occupied by Israel, the occupied territories. And for about the same time, it all happened after the Second World War. Then you have a large-scale military police operation against the First Nations in the middle of India, in about 10 or 12 states, where big business is coming after the resources, after the land, after the forest, after the mineral resources, and the people who are the First Nations want to defend their land, and they are being kicked out of their villages. They are being regrouped in kind of concentration camps, and they have joined forces with Maoist guerrillas. So now the Indian Army is fighting the First Nations and the Maoist guerrillas in over half of the country. And then the third war is the war going on in the northeast, where India has a sensitive border with China. Therefore, it tries to preserve a strong presence there. But the people who live in northeast India are ethnically, culturally, linguistically different from the people who are running the country, and who in fact want autonomy. Some of them even want independence. So you have huge military operations going on there. This is, you are absolutely right. If this kind of situation existed in Canada, it'd be hard for us to say we're going to have elections in the middle of it all.
What about, as you mentioned, China? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, how soon is it this election to happen? China, you know, has requested to create group or a party, including Iranian and what have you. Could you elaborate a little bit and tell that to our audience?
Well, you know, a lot of things have been happening since the collapse of the Soviet Union and the end of the Cold War. While we in the West believed we had won the Cold War and we were now masters of the world, that was the attitude in Western countries, which are members of the OECD and of NATO, the economic and the military alliance led by the United States, of which Canada is part. We thought, now we have no rival, no opposition. The world is ours for 1,000 years. But things have been happening outside of the West. And one of the important things that has happened is the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, of which China and Russia are members, together with Central Asian countries. And they are having all kinds of economic partnerships and even military, joint military exercises. And in the economic partnership, they have started trading without the dollar. Before, all trade was done in dollar. Now, the Russians are paying the Chinese in yuan, the Chinese are paying the Russians in ruble. They are doing the same thing, in fact, with Iran. That has been happening. But in the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, Iran is not a member. And now the Russians and the Chinese are proposing that Iran join and they might even extend it to other countries of Eurasia, because they want a counterbalance to the West, especially NATO, as its name suggests, North Atlantic Treaty Organization, was it supposed to operate in the North Atlantic, North America, and Western Europe. But today NATO is in Afghanistan. Afghanistan is very far from the North Atlantic. And they are pushing into Ukraine. Ukraine is very far from the North Atlantic. So the Chinese and the Russians are basically trying to counter this. You may have noticed that China and Russia have been putting their veto in the UN Security Council for 2 years now. They started with Syria. And they put their veto about 4 or 5 times because they saw that what the West wanted to do in Syria was the same thing they had done in Libya, was go in, overthrow the government, and leave chaos. And they didn't want this to happen in Syria. They said no. So the use of the veto, now they're saying, let's have a new alliance. You see where the new balance of power and the equilibrium in world affairs is going to come from.
Who is really running India, and does the new government have agenda of the new image of India, or they are trying to create an alliance with outsiders and push the economic? What is their real agenda?
India is being run and has been run certainly for 20 years, 25 years now, by oligarchs, very much like Russia, and I would say very much like the US. It's really the big billionaires, big corporations, who have financed political parties, and by buying political parties, they have bought the state power, state privatization. And India, in that sense, is no different from the Western countries, from European countries, from North American countries. And when you talk about the agenda is to continue integration in the global capitalist movement, where the capitalism is becoming more and more financialized, which means the capitalists are not investing anymore in companies that produce things. They are just playing on the stock market, where within 24 hours, they can make a bigger profit than if they give money to an entrepreneur to start a factory to produce goods that are going to benefit people. And this is where India is going.
With the new government, while they're in power in the next 5 years, are people saying that they might rewrite the history, they might change things, they might demolish more agricultural environments? What is going to be happening? What are you hearing on the street?
I think we can expect the worst. We're talking about right-wing extremists in power. And these people who are now going to run the government of India, the Prime Minister is going to be sworn in tomorrow, Monday, May 26th. These people have a brutal past. They have an itinerary. They have heavy baggage of violence and murder and genocide. So, we can wish that they will not be extremist, but we cannot trust that will be so.
Okay, well, we would like to thank you for sitting with us on behalf of CKUT 90.3. Is there anything you would like to tell our Asian community, anything you would like to share?
Well, I think what I'd like to share basically is my astonishment, and I think the astonishment of millions and millions at the turn of events of politics in India. But I would add that India is a very vast, very diverse, very rich society and culture. And we should not forget that only 31-32% of the electorate actually voted for the BJP, which means nearly 70% did not vote for the BJP. And those people themselves will know how to deal with the situation when the time comes, and to have faith in that.
Well, thank you so much, and we can definitely hope for the best.
Thank you very much, and thanks, CKUT.